Matt Welch, Editor-in-Chief of Reason Magazine, and I'm joined here today by Richard Vedder. He's an economics professor at Ohio University in Ohio, author of several books, including Going Broke by Degree, Why College Costs Too Much. And you have a sort of an interesting counterintuitive take on higher education policy in this country that, if I'm not mistaken, the government, in trying to make it affordable, has made it too expensive. Can you explain how that works?
Yeah. It takes a larger percentage of a family's income to go to college today than it did 30, 40, 50 years ago for almost all Americans. Now, that's not true of most things that we buy. It's not true of airline travel. It's not true of buying automobiles. With economic growth, things usually get less burdensome with the passage of time. But with higher ed, it's the opposite. And part of the reason, a huge part of the reason, is because governmental policies, although well-intended, no doubt, have had sort of an effect of increasing the demand for higher education, the number of kids wanting to go to college, without having the same impact on the supply of higher education, meaning the prices have been pushed up. So tuition costs have gone up at twice the rate of inflation for 34 years, going up faster than medical costs.
Why wouldn't the law of supply and demand suggest that people would start universities? Because it's profitable.
Well, that is exactly what is starting to happen. But the main obstacle to that have been accreditation rules, various governmental restrictions, governments refusing to provide the financial aid that they provide for kids to go to government schools, to go to particularly the new proprietary or for-profit institutions, which I think have a great deal of promise and are growing rather fast in spite of all of these obstacles. And that's where maybe the future lies. But right now, we are government drops money out of airplanes over campuses. Those campuses use that money inefficiently. They're medievally organized. They're not disciplined by market forces, unlike the rest of the economy, or most of the rest of the economy. And as a consequence, just like medical care, costs are rising and rising and rising.
Should states or governments have as a policy goal to increase the number of college graduates?
I think that's a questionable objective. It's a laudable sounding objective, but I think we have to ask ourselves, what are the benefits of a college education? What are the costs of a college education? Is the piece of paper we give people, called a diploma, really necessary for a lot of the work that goes on in the workforce today? 12% of the mail carriers in the United States today now have bachelor's degrees. Do you really need a bachelor's degree to deliver the mail? In 1970, only 3% did. Is it suddenly mail delivery has become much more intellectually challenging than it did 40 years ago? I don't think so. We're having more and more people who are getting college degrees that are having trouble getting jobs that are really related to the intellectual development, such as it is that they get while they're in universities. So I'm wondering whether we've maybe started to overinvest in higher education. That's a view, by the way, held by some other scholars, Charles Murray being most notable among them, that many people going to college don't have the cognitive skills for college. They're ill-prepared for college. And if they do get a degree, it's often watered down. And we're just spending a lot of money to give a person a piece of paper.
The Obama administration has proposed making Pell Grants something akin to an entitlement. What's your reaction about the wisdom of that?
I think it's highly questionable. First of all, why should, philosophically, I wonder, why should governments be paying for higher education? The only justifications for government paying for higher education is, one, yes, equal access. We want to help people move up the economic ladder. That's the American egalitarian ideal. That's an argument. The other argument is that education somehow has these spillover effects that are positive, that if one person goes to college, that tends to promote economic growth and all. All of my research shows that these are myths. Actually, the more we spend on more the states spend on colleges and universities, the lower the rate of economic growth they have. Not the higher, the lower the rate of economic growth they have. And as far as equal opportunity, we have actually a smaller percentage of low-income people in the college population today than we did 35 years ago, before Pell Grants and before most of these federal programs. So they haven't worked the way they were supposed to. And so the notion that somehow we ought to expand them when they haven't really been very effective in the first place strikes me as bizarre. That's, of course, putting aside issues like the huge federal deficits and the irresponsibility of the federal government borrowing huge sums of money and all these other macroeconomic issues, putting those aside.
How and when did you arrive at your interest in free markets and limited government principles and libertarianism?
Well, I'm an economic historian by training. I studied economic history, and I did not come at things from a libertarian perspective or even a conservative perspective. In fact, I have some fairly progressive left-wing credentials in my family. But the more I looked into things, the more I saw that countries with free markets, relatively stable money supplies, limited government, tended to be more prosperous, grow more. I did a lot of work on migration. Where did people move? Did they move from West Germany to East Germany, or did they move from East Germany to West Germany? What side, when people try to cross the Berlin Wall and get shot at, it wasn't going from west to east, it was going from east to west. The West had something resembling a market economy. The East had something that was quite different. I found that markets worked, and I must do some empirical work. And the more regressions I ran, the more I found that people that responded to market forces and market forces had a positive effect on society. Then, of course, I started reading people like Rothbard and many other thinkers who said much the same thing, and that probably reinforced my thinking on the matter.
Looking at the current climate, what do you see as sort of the biggest fear that you have on the horizon in terms of public policy or the economy? And then also, what's your biggest hope for things getting better?
Well, I think we are at a crossroads as a nation. We, as Bob Higgs has wrote in his book Crisis and Leviathan, we have gone through certain critical periods in history where there's been a big upsurge in government activity that seems to not reverse itself. We had that during the Great Depression, and we had it again in the 1960s to some extent. Seems to me we're starting the possibility of going through another wave of that with the Obama administration. We have government is controlled by people who are fundamentally distrustful of capitalism and in some cases downright hostile to it. They're socialists, and I don't mean that as a pejorative term, but it's just a fact. And that is very concerning. Will they prevail or not? Will they be able to adopt the agenda? Having said that, getting to the last half of your question, I have some hope because, first of all, I teach 20, 21, 22-year-old kids, and they are less smitten with the socialist impulse, the government impulse. They are more open to the possibilities that markets have power and can do good for society than perhaps many people realize. And I really think in the long run, the Obama experiment will prove unsuccessful, and there will be a counter-revolution, if you like. The current political environment on the right is unfortunately pretty murky and without leadership. But in time, that will change. And so I think long run, perhaps we are not so bad.
On that hopeful note, we'll end there. Thank you very much. This is Matt Welch for Reason TV.